Good morning and welcome to The Morning Edge. I'm Floyd J. Winters, and you may be right. And here is Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay.
If you can you give us a call if you're having some issues with the audio? Because we're not quite sure what's happening. We're getting some different conflicting information here. So we're just having some difficulties here with what's going on. And we're test driving this. They've made some changes in our studio, and it's part of life, whether you're working with a computer or working with a microphone. And they took away my microphone condom. Oh, no, dear.
That does have a way of disappearing.
And yeah, there's a little fuzz guard on these things that keep it from the S's from going, making all kinds of strange
from getting mushy words coming out of our mouths. There you go. Well, you've got a lot of things on the agenda today. Trump keeps intruding on everybody's parade. You've got the situation with Hillary coming out for college help in the college affordability crisis. And are we going to really educate our students? Are we going to drive them out of school? They can't afford to go, and after a while, people just finally give up. Then you also have the situation with Voting Rights Act. As of this coming election in 16, there will be no real protection against the abuses that have been going on. The voter ID, the changing of the polls, the moving of precincts around and that sort of thing, as well as voter ID used as a way to deny the vote to the minorities. You can call in 941-745. We already had a caller prior to the show complaining about the level of sound, and that is a problem. But the Voting Rights Act, which was really aimed at the South, Texas and Florida and places that have really screwed around with the vote, is going on. You have this.
Let's talk about that.
Sure, sure.
They claim that. So what's the big deal? You want an ID to prevent fraudulent votes. Now, by the way, they're not finding the fraudulent votes. They haven't found it in the past, but they want that. Augie, what do you think about that? Is it really a fraudulent?
Well, they've determined already that it's a problem with an easy solution. Stop making a problem out of nothing. Whole cloth is the situation here. So it's just something that, when they really check into it, it's not very much. The fact it's discussed in the decisions under Roberts in his court. Do we have a caller?
Yeah, the caller says we're clear, but you have to turn the volume all the way up.
All the way up. When you take your
earlier show.
Well, thank you for that caller. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm
going to raise our levels up here a little bit better here.
That'll help, maybe. In his opinion for the majority in the Supreme Court's 2013 Shelby County decision, which struck down a major section of the Voting Rights Act, Chief Justice John C. Roberts, Jr. wrote that history did not end in 1965. But the sad truth that voter suppression efforts did not end either. The effort to suppress the vote has continued. In 2014, the first post-Shelby election, thousands were turned away for restrictions in states like Texas and North Carolina. 2014 study by the government's Government Accountability Office found that voter ID laws in Kansas and Tennessee reduced turnout by 2 to 3% during the 2012 election, enough to swing a close vote, with the highest drop-off among young, black, and newly registered voters. This could be a disturbing preview for 2016, which will be the first presidential contest in 50 years, where voters cannot rely on the full protection of the act. New restrictions will be in place in up to 15 states, which account for as many as 182 electoral votes. Very important. If you really want a fair election, you have to have the protection of the minorities to be able to vote, including crucial swing states like Ohio, Wisconsin, and Virginia. The act signed 50 years ago today was the crowning achievement of the civil rights movement. It swept aside long-standing practices that disenfranchised voters and prevented new ones from emerging. Between 65 and 2013, the Justice Department and federal courts blocked more than 3,000 discriminatory voter changes, but it is precisely that capacity, known as preclearance, the Roberts Court invalidated. But preclearance looked at what they really were doing effectively, and the Justice Department had to decide if that was going to be continued to be allowed. So you, right here in Manatee County and in Sarasota County, we've seen this kind of nonsense of moving polls. You had our supervisor of elections here in Manatee County moving 29 precincts around. Excuse me? Not coming through. Yeah, we're having. We just had someone walk in the studio and question were we coming on the air. And maybe you out there, if you're not hearing us very well, call in and we'll have the conversation with you. Turn up your volume and see what we can do. In the 1980s, resistance to the civil rights laws. I've lost track here. Became a defining cause for ambitious young conservatives like John Roberts, who wrote dozens of memos criticizing the Voting Rights Act. He came in under Rehnquist, who was very opposed to the civil rights laws protections and all of that long before, Roberts served under the Reagan Justice Department. He believed the act should prohibit only intentional discrimination, whatever that is, in voting, which was nearly impossible to prove. That's what the article says, and that's what I say. This is written by Ari Berman. The backlash entered a new phase after the 2000 election, when a botched voter purge in Florida, while Jeb Bush was governor, disproportionately prevented African Americans from voting and helped George Bush into the White House. The Bush administration reoriented the Justice Department, prioritizing prosecutions of voter fraud over investigating into voter disenfranchisement. So the willingness to block the voter through tricks and gimmicks and petty rules, like, for example, right now, Floyd, we've got a situation where students can get a gun permit, no problem, but they can't get voter registration if they're in a state other than their own.
They don't want a gun permit. Representative Stubbe wants them to carry guns into the classroom.
Yeah, there you go.
They don't want to have a gun permit.
Yeah, but that's the distracting thing. That's the more important thing. And give them the guns, but don't give them the vote. That's really
right.
What we're talking about here.
Well, the thing is, a lot of students tend to vote Democratic. That's historically the case. Older people tend to vote Republican. It's been that way for many decades. And they look at the demographics they have, and if they can keep people who have been in prison, if they can keep them out of voting. Charlie Crist gave almost 10 times more restoration of voting rights back to prisoners, ex-cons, than our current governor that we have right now. And that's one of the ways he can do to, if it's a close vote, if you can take care of the prison population. But also, well, okay, they say, oh, these are bad people. People have gone to prison because they smoked some marijuana. But anyway, if you can get rid of the marijuana voters, but also on the other end, the people who are our future college voters, they do not want them to vote either. And they make it very difficult for them. Say, for instance, you come from New York. Now, when I went to Rutgers, I came from New York and I went to Rutgers because I lived in New Jersey full-time during that time. I was able to vote. But they don't want you to vote here in Florida if you come from out of state. Even though if you live in Florida full-time, they're making it very difficult for students because they realize that the majority of students tend to vote Democratic and they can help sway elections. The same exact thing with the gerrymandering and the voter precincts. The Supreme Court and other courts have three times invalidated the way they have drawn their districts to make sure that they elect more and more Republicans in a disproportionate number.
Well, the effort by the conservatives, I would say, is the Republican Party really the party of Lincoln anymore? I think it isn't. I think that's the past, and the present is it's a bizarre Dixiecrat Republican Party, former Southern racists who became Republicans and their ilk, as one of our frequent callers likes to refer to that term. And I think that it's a curious phenomena that we have this situation today. In this party, all they care about is the white male vote and maybe the woman's vote. But, of course, lately we've heard things out of Rubio's mouth talking about, golly gee whiz, rape and incest. Oh, no, woman. You're not going to get an abortion.
Now, that was Scott Walker.
No, actually, it was Rubio,
Rubio
too.
Rubio as well?
They
I
both,
haven't heard Rubio
they both,
say that one.
Yes, he did. Just, yeah. And, it's been, and Hillary has jumped all over that, mm-hmm. although not too much avail because her numbers are falling pretty seriously. But anyway, but going on with this, you push to make it harder to vote, and the Tea Party's triumph in the 2000 election showed that. The 2000 election had 12,000 votes that were absentee ballots, and what they did, going back to the felony issue that you brought up, Floyd, which is that if you have a felony in Florida, one of five states, that felony has to have the personal permission of the governor and or a commission that he appoints. And that's not what you mentioned that Chris was doing. His commission was expediting people's right to vote, having served their sentences.
Haven't paid their penalty, pay their dues. And
they've done it all, yeah. And now they're faced with wanting to vote and become citizens again. But since they're minority most of the time, it's assumed by those in control of the voting procedures, your supervisor of elections, well, gee whiz, they don't, they might vote against the Republican Party. So we're going to make sure that they don't get the vote. We're going to list them as someone not, they don't. We'll take them off the voter rolls. And if they show up at the for registration, we'll say, well, you're listed as a criminal along with the ones who are. So the ones who are forgiven, even if your name and you were forgiven, even if you weren't a felon, they were turning them away. In fact, I know of two twins who were white. I won't say their name. And one of their brothers, they're five young men, all white, and because their name possibly could be a black name, they were blocked from voting. And, you know, golly, and they were young, as Floyd was mentioning. They were young, and therefore they might vote Democrat.
And by the way, speaking about Democrats, the people kind of really got that term gerrymandering going with the Democrats. The Democrats were really wonderful about that. Both parties do it. Well, and that's why I'd like to see the open primary. Yeah. So that the parties aren't so important. So
amen to that.
Yeah. So you and again, there is an amendment where they're moving to have non-primary,
non-partisan voting.
Yeah, all voters can vote. In the there's not a Republican primary, not a Democratic primary. There is a primary where you vote for the candidate you want. Republicans, Democrats run in the same pool, and as a consequence, they have to run towards the middle. Louisiana, California, and Washington currently have this. And if you had that situation in Florida where you're voting for the best person as opposed to the person at the farthest right and the farthest left, you would the gerrymandering, the manipulation of congressional districts would not be as important. And right now the Republicans do what the Democrats used to do. They've both been very
well,
good at it.
Well, it's the same conservatives that were Democrats who now are Republicans. It's the same people. They
true.
Just changed hats, Floyd, you know?
And that's true. After Lyndon Johnson's election, when he went to the voting rights law, and the voting rights law in the 1960s on both of those particular acts, the Solid South turned from being Democrat to Republican.
Most of that happened in the 70s, and you could see it right here in Manatee, Sarasota County. The same people were being elected. They just changed the title of the registration, and that's what they did. I was a registered Republican, and when Reagan became president, I said, this is the end of my association with the Republican Party, because he is not a Republican. Even though he was a registered Democrat and became a Republican, he's not someone in the mold of an Abraham Lincoln by any stretch, the greatest of our presidents, along with FDR. These are the people who cared about the poor, who cared about slavery, who cared about injustice. Reagan was so the opposite. He worked hard at reestablishing those things that the hard Southern South wanted to do. The Voting Rights Act was enforced heavily in the South during his administration because he wanted to. He knew the whites would flee and vote against anybody that was a Democrat, and that was the whole idea. That produced was an interesting advantage to the Republican Party in those days. So, do we have a caller?
We have a caller. We'll give our friend one chance for a question. Good morning, Lawrence.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Good morning, Lawrence. What is on your mind?
I don't hear anything from him. I wonder if our phone is working. I do have the phone turned on. I do have the volume up.
Yeah. Are you there, Lawrence? Are you?
Wait, 1 second. I think he's talking, but...
Yeah.
Okay, let me try it again. Okay, Lawrence, let's try it again.
Yes, good morning.
There you go.
We got you.
What's
now?
On your mind, Lawrence?
I've listened to the beginning of your show, and I was wondering if I may bring up, I'll just throw out a few different topics, and you pick one that we could talk about.
Well, why don't you pick one, Lawrence?
Well, you pick one you like.
Well, I'd like to talk about the EPA and the government blunder in the Colorado River, or Hillary's emails, or Chuck Schumer, or selling of dead baby parts.
Lawrence?
Let's just go with, I can do this this way. I don't think we should do the server yet, because the outcome hasn't been determined. It's in question. She has turned it over, even if it's been...
I thought it was destroyed.
Well, no, allegation was that it was scrubbed, but the report...
And destroyed.
No, excuse me. It has been returned over, and that it was it was scrubbed, but the scrubbing really can't really be accomplished, according to the experts.
Okay, I'll tell you what, Lawrence, if we're talking about the server, ask your question about the server. We'll respond to that let you go.
How about the EPA?
Now, Lawrence, you want to talk
about
the Colorado River?
Talk about the EPA.
Yeah,
okay,
there you go.
Lawrence,
the government, what's the difference between the EPA and the Colorado River a problem and the... BP oil spill.
Oh, very good question. Thank you, Lawrence. That's a good. Yeah, I happen to be familiar where the spill is going to end up, and it's in Lake Powell, and it's one of the largest lakes in the country. It's backed up by the dam there, the Powell Dam. I can't remember the senator who it's named after, but it's a serious problem. It's the various poisons in the production of gold from the mine, and the EPA is responsible for the holding back of that terrible. I think it's why can't I think of the various? Think of some poisons that you can commonly think of, Floyd.
Well, they're almost all there that they use.
They're all there, yeah. There's a whole raft of them. And the EPA was responsible, and the head of the EPA came out and apologized, apologizing being what it is. It doesn't change the damage. And as to the BP spill, that was done by private industry with the oversight of the federal government again, and the oversight of the Coast Guard again. I happen to have been meeting with people in both in St. Pete, the Coast Guard, and with Moat Marine with Senator Nelson at the time, and the solution to the BP, which is a far more serious matter, not that this isn't serious, but it was a very, very horrendous thing that went on and on and on that Norway, Russia, and other countries knew how to solve that we were unwilling to do, because it went against the wishes of the oil companies. It might mess up their rigs, it might mess up their future drilling, but blow up the place where the thing is happening. And what happens in that circumstance when you blow it up? The earth below rises up from the explosion, the way if it's done properly, collapses down and seals things off. And the Norwegians had perfected that and had done it many, many times. And at that time, under the BP spill, I mentioned that to the Senator Nelson. He's, well, we can't do that. We might make a bigger problem. And I said, the bigger problem is the oil company. Again, the oil companies and the insurance companies and the pharmaceuticals run the politicians, including Senator Nelson. And that's what we've had at that moment. The Coast Guard, when I brought up the same issue again, the Coast Guard up in St. Pete in a similar meeting, several other reporters from newspapers were all around writing notes, but not one of the reporters from the Tampa Bay Times, Tampa Bay Tribune, all of these various papers, none of them saying one little word about what I was bringing up. Not that I'm a great reporter or anything like that, it's just that it was interesting. The controversy that might embroil and rise up is something that the cowardly press just didn't talk about. Now, as to the Colorado spill, I'm wondering why they didn't dam the damn thing or put filters down, or there's lots of things they could have done, but they sat on their hands. They're wanting it to enter into Lake Powell. Lake Powell has the longest coastline of any, around it. It's greater than, I think, half the United States. It's a big, big lake, and I have seen it and personally been there. So, and that's got to come through that dam and filter out into the rest of the Colorado River. How they'll contain these various poisons is just beyond me. And what's going to happen to the fish? according to the EPA, the fish in the Animas River where it spilled into, a very popular river, it looks horrid, but supposedly it isn't that harmful to fish. I can't believe with those poisons that's
part of
it's
iron, zinc, and copper and other heavy metals.
Right.
But yes, it absolutely is terrible, and the EPA just screwed this whole entire thing up.
They did. They definitely did. So Lawrence is right about that. I wonder if Lawrence's point is really a concern for the environment. As much,
what it is, yes.
I wonder what that concern really amounts to. And the same thing with the BP spill. Now, the BP spill is far worse. It's formed the way they suppressed the rising oil so it wouldn't be on the surface, so people wouldn't see it. They spread dispersants onto the oil so it would sink. So it's really formed a huge jelly, if you will, in the bottom of the Gulf, like a big bowl. The Gulf isn't really very deep as big waters go, but it is deep enough to hold the jelly, and the currents that go on the perimeter of the Gulf along the coastlines is such that it's not washed back out into the deeper waters of the Atlantic to the east, and it's maintained a problem for fish life and all of the various creatures out there that have to ingest that. It's good for our industries, oil being what it is. It's good for Saudi Arabia, our good friend over there who's got $10 barrel oil, who can wreck our fracking efforts. It can wreck just about any business they choose because they have cheap oil. And you have that situation. What was the other? There was two other things that Lawrence had brought up. I can't recall.
Well, we have a choice of having the Lawrence Show or having the Morning Edge. I think we were doing good in the Voters' Right Act.
Well, we can go back to that. Sure. Yeah. I'm just answering those points. If any other callers want to talk about it, I don't think that's really our choice, that it's a Lawrence Show. I think it's a case of issues, and I think he brought up some issues.
I'm glad that he's interested in protecting our environment. I think that's wonderful.
That's the real point.
On the right-hand side.
I think we don't want to question his real loyalty to the environment,
I think that's really important.
Right.
And without doubt, the EPA screwed this up in this particular part of the country with this. We also have a hot spot right here with some of the mines we have for the phosphate mines. Near Port Manatee, we have quite a few acres of toxic waste that we have. And with a big enough hurricane or big enough floods, they may overflow. And we've been trying to mitigate that situation here for about 15, 20 years.
Yeah, I think it's called Mosaic, basically.
My Mosaic. I didn't want to mention them by name. They're trying very hard to clean up.
They buy every politician they can grab. I mean, including Keith Fitzgerald has taken big money from them. And when he was pointedly asked about this, well, I don't follow their advice, but you follow their money.
Yeah, Keith was a Democrat. He also took the Mosaic money.
And he's going to run again.
So Mosaic's trying hard to clean up. It was something they inherited from a prior company, but it's huge out there close to Port Manatee of all kinds of toxic chemicals that were used in the phosphate mining. The phosphate industry has been very good for Florida as far as bringing in income, selling.
They were the single biggest exporter of that product, and it's all meant to nourish your GMO engineered farming, and you like all those chemicals out there, and they serve you well. They make everything cheaper and cheaper until it's worthless. I mean, that's ironic.
Well, again, fertilizer is important for growing our food and growing our crops. Mosaic has a place. They're trying to avoid some of the problems they've had in the past. They're trying to be a responsible partnership. I've been out there both to the pond that they have, where they have all these toxic chemicals, but also to see the mitigation they've done in reclaiming some of the old phosphate pit mines that they used to have, and they're doing a good job restoring it to the wildlife. And I've given them credit for trying to make an attempt to be a good neighbor. I'm not real thrilled with some of the things they've done, but they're trying to improve the past history they've had.
It's hard to hide what they do, and the reason is because these piles, what do they call those, sediment piles, or there's a certain name for those, and they're up there in small mountains. I've always wondered, in fact, you have garbage dumps, which are piles in mountains outside of Florida cities, hills that they run tracks upon for kids and so forth to make a playground out of it. The inability of the communities to really deal with the waste that we use and run through ourselves and through our systems, whether it's sewage or mosaic, all these places have these piles of things. And it just sooner, you know, what does New York do with its waste? It's got piles and mountains of waste out sitting out in the Atlantic. And then the East Coast gets that, and a Sandy comes up and flushes everything back in your face. Right now, New York City is faced with they need a new tunnel for the rail systems. And they're planning one that would be done and finished by 2026. I can't recall the name of the particular tunnel that it's called, but Mr. Chris Christie, Mr. Braggadocio, Mr. Bully, has told people to sit down and shut up. Don't talk about the fact that I stopped a tunnel. I had the money for it. I was supposed to spend it on a second tunnel, which would have allowed the repair of the other tunnel, which now is in trouble again on top of because of flooding from Sandy. When that happened, that shut down all of that. There are 26 or 27 trains per hour to go through that tunnel. That's how much traffic has to go through, and that tunnel is ready to fall apart. You could kill a bunch of people.
And tying it into the pollution you were talking about?
Yes.
How does it tie in?
Well, the reason it's an indication of what certain governors will do with your federal money to make things better, because if you don't have transportation, whether it's by freight or by passenger, and it's in this case it happens to be passenger, now if you want to haul stuff away, if you want to move things around, if you want commerce to really work, pollution blocks the rail, blocks the waters, blocks the Gulf of Mexico, blocks the use of all intake of fresh water, desalinization. All these things become affected. All the stuff cross currents of materials get in the way of what we call commerce. And the ironic thing is, the people who don't want a good system of transport for freight and or people, in the case of the New York area, a la Mr. Christie, and people who don't care about the pollution and care more about the oil companies and are they worse than or whatever. And I would say that the take I would have had on the previous caller was that he was suggesting that this is as bad or worse than the BP spill. I doubt that anybody reasonably would say that.
They both were bad.
But this one is not nearly so disastrous.
And but it's prompted by our government, which I think is
well, the regulation, this is, Floyd, this is a regulation issue, isn't it, really? I mean, the guy that's in charge of the regulation, was he incompetent? The guy in charge of what happened into overseeing what happened in the Gulf, the same, what guy was that? Was it the EPA? Was it the National Guard? The Coast Guard? What was it that allowed that to continue so long? And the politicians trying to cover their rear end over it. You know, who's responsible here? I mean, are we going to let industry decide what cleanups go on? Who owned the gold mine? They're going to say, well, we contained those poisons and the copper and so forth in that we used to separate gold from other ores. You know, who's responsible here? How do we get to responsibility? And how does government work when these questions are starting to float and bubble up everywhere? And when you hear people say, government's the problem, not the solution, well, maybe the problem is the people who don't want a solution just want the corporations and so forth just to have their way. I don't know.
Well, we can take a look at it when we come back again.
Sure.
Not only is it iron and copper that one of the articles said, there's also mercury, which is 10 times higher than the EPA rate, beryllium, cadmium.
Cyanide, I think, was in there. Yeah.
They had all kinds of different things. Arsenic, over 800
that
times
higher. That was the other
higher.
One I was trying to think of, sure.
So, but we're going to take a break, and we will be back in a short while. Thank you for tuning in to 1490 AM.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. 727-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
With the animals, hunt, speak, with the animals, and in the street.
This part of the Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy.
Welcome back to 1490 AM. I'm Floyd J. Winters, and to the right of me is Augie. We were talking about two topics. One, the Voting Rights Act and some of the voting issues. And the second thing, we got sidetracked and we're talking about the EPA fiasco that caused mercury, beryllium, cadmium, arsenic, iron, copper to be dumped into part of our beautiful rivers out west.
It's the Animas River going into Lake Powell out in the Colorado River.
Yeah. So,
Colorado River Basin.
If you'd like to add to these topics, give us a call at
941-1490. That's all right.
941-745-1490.
There you go. We got it right.
Finally, yes, we make up mistakes here.
Well, let's continue on a little bit what we started out at on the Voting Rights Act, because what can be done is the final thing. This is by Ari Berman. About the Voting Rights Act and how important that is to our government, the kinds of problems we have in our government. And largely, we've been under conservative oversight and what have you, we've been defunding government. It isn't that it's too big, that we've defunded it. We're a very large and growing country, large corporate interests and so forth that need to be regulated. Stop signs on the roadways and left turns, right turns, what have you, speed limits. But what can be done? The Voting Rights Advancement Act of 2015, introduced in Congress in June, would compel states with a recent history of voting discrimination to once again clear election charges with the and changes with the federal government, and would require approval for specific measures that often target minority voters today and make it difficult for them and impede them to vote. But the bill hasn't gone anywhere. In the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, Congress will not schedule a hearing. And here locally, you've seen the 29 precincts being moved in the very first year by Mr. Bennett, who claimed that they can walk further, they can take two bus trips to get to their precinct, they can do whatever inconveniences them. If they really care about voting, they'll do it, no matter where I move the precincts. Same thing in Sarasota County, same nonsense and excuse. And racist, I think, because precinct 31's been moved all around. Kathy Dent has clustered precincts with the idea of clustering the ones that are convenient to the people who are the most comfortable and inconveniencing the poor. And really, it's a war on the poor. I wrote some notes. We have a war on poverty, which is really a war on the poor, through the war on drugs. And you saw that in what's happened in Ferguson, the resurrection of riots and so forth. So when people are deprived, they're not allowed to vote, to have a say in their government, the voting right thing is really where it's at. And it does go back to that. See, we've got now, as I said, the supervisor, Bob Sweat, a loved Republican supervisor of election in Manatee County, respected, would not do harm to the system, cared about the system of voting probably more than his own life, just ignored as to precedent by this current supervisor of election. Now who's going to jump ship and run to back to Sarasota to run for, I forget what job he's going to run to, but the point is he's about to leave you and leave it in the hands of Ron Turner, who's under his wing, if you will, who's been running things all along, anyhow, but you'll hear his name down the road. We're going to have Mitch Perry on the show on Friday, hopefully. I talked to him, and we talked about the voter, allvotersvote.com that was put forward as an issue that you brought up, Floyd. that would make that there would be no party primaries, that anybody could vote in a primary and the party could not control it. That would change the power a lot and would change your power and give you more power. At the same time, we've got the thing with college affordability, which I think, Floyd, is not a little problem. Monday, Hillary Clinton, the Democratic front runner, released an ambitious proposal that aims to help students on public four-year colleges graduate without incurring any debt for tuition. Senator Bernie Sanders, the Vermont Democrat, who has gone even further and said that he would make tuition free for all undergraduate students at public institutions. Regrettably, none of the Republican candidates have come up with anything comparable. Students and their families are paying more for college and going deeper into debt every year. About 60% of graduates from four-year public universities had student loans in 2013. Now, you know, you would think, Floyd, that the conservatives of the world would have some concern that we educate people. But is there concern really that we're already educated, we don't give a damn if the students get educated or if they have an education that they can afford to go to? Or what is their motive for it? I really don't get that.
I'm not sure what's happening there, but let's take a look at some of the numbers. The typical college student ends up about $30,000 loan. Sometimes they're well over $100,000. It depends upon what it may be. It depends upon if you're getting a two-year degree, if you're a public school or private school. But typically about $30,000. Not a huge number. If you go to a bigger four-year school, maybe $50,000 or $60,000. What I think is horrible is that they're paying like 6.5% for these loans. Now, today the housing loans you can get for your biggest investment of your life can be as little as 4.5%.
Oh, I've seen 3 now. 3%. Yeah. A little over 3%.
And they're much lower than that. And that 2/3 to 50% the size of a college loan. Why do these loans have to be such a high interest rate to take such a toll on our youth? It's really a damaging situation. And there are a number of individuals who are tempting, like Hillary, to allow more people to take go to college without paying, having these huge expenses, to have more subsidies on that. What were we going to say, Augie?
Well, just that the question is how you're going to pay for it, and there's a lot of ways to go to that. And the students and their families are paying more for college, and so going deeper into debt, as you said, 60% of graduates from four-year institutions in 2013, on average, they owed, it says, almost $30,000, up to 20% from 2000 after adjusting for inflation, according to the College Board. They're paying more in large part because state government reduced higher education spending. And that's the other thing, 25%. Scott, Walker up there in Wisconsin, cut the budget for the upper education by $250 million in Wisconsin. This guy hasn't a clue. He didn't finish college himself, which is all right, but he obviously doesn't have a lot of regard for the costs and so forth that the colleges incur themselves. Now, I happen to think that the cost of college should be borne by the corporations that demand quality students. They need to be the contributors primarily, because then they would have a say in the kind of quality they want and expect from students to bring them.
I'm ambivalent about this, because I realize that if you give something to somebody for free, they don't appreciate it. They don't appreciate it. So when you're giving a lot of students this money, and somebody saying, okay, you have this, they're not always taking that money and using it to get an education. Some of them are using it for their car. Some of them are using it for their food.
Well, I think you're off base here a little bit.
I don't think so at all. Mm-hmm. This is an area that I do have a lot of.
Well, you're assuming the money is going to go directly to the student instead of to the college.
Well, actually, the students do have a lot of control over what happens to some of that money.
Well, that's currently, right?
That's currently right now. So I would not like to just have everybody get a free ride, because, unfortunately, there's a significant amount. I'm not saying the majority. I'm not saying even a third. Yeah. But I would say 10, 20, 30% of some students would take the money that they might be able to get and use it for their own means. And it's an unfortunate situation I've seen happen live all too often.
So what example is that?
I mean, Florida is attempting to resolve this, But for a while, at the place where I work,
What free education is available now that the student can expropriate and not use for the college and go on?
Right now that they can use for
currently,
their own thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are grants and loans that they can get mm-hmm. that they can actually use for certain living expenses, and they could, which can be kind of questionable. The situation that I had was I had a student who sat in the second row, the very left-hand corner of my classroom for the first day of class. And then she didn't show up again. But the college had passed a rule saying that I was not allowed to remove her as long as she attended mm-hmm. one day during the first mm-hmm. 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I could not remove her as long as she attended. Now, there used to be a provision that allowed me to do that when I first started teaching. Mm-hmm. But then suddenly that rule was changed.
So then she got a hold of the money somehow.
And then she got a hold of the money. Well, the next semester, there the same student was in the same exact seat, one day, and again I could not remove her. Now, prior years I was able to remove that student, mm-hmm. and as a consequence she was able to get her financial aid. The third semester, she was able to sit right there again, and again I was unable to remove her. Now, it took me 2 years. It took me 2 years to find out what was going on. And I found out as long as that student withdraws on her own or his own before, I think, like 60% through the course, and the professor doesn't drop them, they will get their full financial aid as long as they're considered enrolled. Mm-hmm. And there was a provision keeping me from dropping them.
I really
well,
think
the college mm-hmm. was getting what's called FTE. They were getting credit for that student. The student was given the financial aid. It was a shared scam.
So the college was getting, how much money did the college get?
The college was getting their several hundred, I don't know what the exact number
was. Well, let's just go by percentage. They must have, if they were getting something, they were getting a portion.
Yeah, the college was getting money from the state because they were considered that student to be
enrolled. But you don't know what that was.
I don't know the exact numbers.
Sure. I mean, you don't know the percentage either, like half and half or?
No, I don't. And the student was getting money from their financial aid. And they were coming from two different pots. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, the college... Mm-hmm. And what I did is I went to meeting after meeting, and I got stonewalled. I finally went to one meeting and was put on the agenda, a vice president's meeting, and they said, okay, well, we'll tell you, we'll give you the answer to these questions. They put me at the very end. They said, well, time is up. We don't have enough time. We have to leave. So it took me another three more months to find out the answer, and the answer was... If the student stayed there past the 60% point before I could drop them, and I wasn't allowed to drop them to after the 60%,
sure.
and all of a sudden I was seeing this rash of students,
doing
and I'm talking about
thing.
Dozens of students
sure.
dropping at in this March date in the spring course, they're just dropping boom, 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 boom. Students who hadn't been there, and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Finally, I put a pattern to it after three semesters. And I went back and I simply said, if I have to, I'm going to go to Congress, the congressman, and that day's was Keith Fitzgerald, I'm going to let him know what's going on.
Well, he was not in the Congress.
Well, the Florida legislature.
Yeah.
And let him
mm-hmm.
know what's going on, because this is ridiculous. They did curtail that practice. The state found out about it and fined him, I think, $3 million. I probably saved the college over $1 million mm-hmm. on that by ending it about a year and a half early.
Yeah. But all that is built on the idea that somehow the student's going to get a piece of whatever money.
And the students do.
Well, that's under our system. But the system that's being proposed is not that at all. The college provides free tuition. If you qualify to get into the college, you get the free tuition under Hillary's plan. And in the way that they do it in Europe. In fact, we have my granddaughter I sent her to college over in Paris back about 5 years ago now. And she met this young woman, and she came to visit, and she's with us now, and she is in college finishing up in Paris. It costs her 300 euros to go to school, and she goes to school, and she finishes up. The students don't get direct money there, and under Hillary's plan and under Bernie Sanders' plan, they don't get direct money. The money goes only to the schools. And
I think that's a wonderful idea. And I'm not saying most students do that. I do say that a number of students do it, enough that it creates
a
problem.
But you keep saying the number of students do it under the system we have
here.
We
currently have.
So
and
the point is...
What happens eventually, they basically said, if you fall below a certain grade level, you're going to lose your financial aid. And that's what I'm asking for. If you're going to give it to them for free, make sure they earn it. make sure they go to classes, make sure they pass their courses. If they don't pass their courses, don't allow them to stay.
Well, if you want to get into the minutia of how to manage it, you know, then you can make the stipulation that they don't get into the in Europe, basically, you don't get into upper education unless you reach a certain grade level in your schooling. So you, if you fall below that number, you go to gymnasium, which is basically trades. And that's all right, too, because even in the trades, you have to take math and all the other things. But you don't get direct money that way in those systems. And in the systems being offered by Bernie Sanders and by Hillary, those systems aren't going to give you, you're not going to get direct aid that you can play around with the system that way. That is an obvious abuse that's going on. It's largely because in this country, we play around with what we really do for people. And the state of Florida has a
bright futures. Yes.
Bright futures. And my granddaughter received that, and she was in Boston going to school. And it took us forever to get them to forward the money when the time came. I paid her bill for 2 years. And it was like excruciating stuff. But the state was screwing it up, and I'm sure in your situation you're talking about is exactly the same thing. I taught for 4 years at Manatee, and I had a student, for example, who went all the way through a course with me, gave him an A. I did all the work, and because he missed a test for, I forget what, flu or something like that in the college, he missed it by a day. He went in and did the test, did the flu thing, but because it showed up on his records that he hadn't done it by a certain date, he got no credit for that, spending an entire semester in the course. So I think you have a screwed up administration at what was Manatee, is now Florida State, or whatever they call it. But I ran into some very good teachers over there in a very screwed up system.
But sometimes it is. I think it's a wonderful place. People who go to the college have wonderful things. They do extremely well when they go on to their four-year schools. I wouldn't have been there for 30-some years if I didn't love the place.
Did you ever teach part-time there?
Yes, I have.
And when you taught part-time, did you get the same rate for the same course you got when you got to be full-time?
No, the rate.
What was the difference?
Huge, huge. Probably maybe a fifth or something like that.
So you were teaching a regular graduating level course at one level as part-time and a different level when you were full-time. Is that right?
Actually, I've taught the same course both part-time and full-time, and as a part-time professor, getting paid, well, by today's standards, but getting paid maybe a third of what a full-time professor would get paid.
Yeah.
But by the way, when a full-time professor teaches an extra class, he or she will get paid the same amount of money as a part-time teacher.
But that's extra money.
Extra class.
But they fill up, they'll give part-time people almost full-time work to avoid paying them full-time pay.
And what happened is the state came down on that and said it wasn't fair, so as a consequence, they reduced the number of hours for part-time people, or number of courses they could teach. It's a wonderful college, but like any institution...
But this isn't just this college. It's all over the state, problem.
Yeah. But whether it's the police department or the college or the student body themselves or the citizens, you're going to find bad apples in each case, and we've had some situations that haven't been at the best case. Let's take this caller right now. Caller, we're going to put you on the air. You've got about 30 seconds to ask a question. Caller, you're live.
Hello.
Drop tenure.
Yeah, that's really
an interesting
bad idea.
Yeah.
I think totally, unless tenure is tied to research and advanced education by sitting teachers, and so I was tenured up in Illinois in a college up there, I think tenure is a very good thing. For serious teachers, it has been abused from place to place.
Absolutely, it's been abused.
But the abuse doesn't excuse the elimination, in my honest opinion.
Well, in the college, you don't have tenure. You have continuing contract. And I've seen, probably in my time, six teachers have been let go as a consequence of not doing a good job. And with the exception of maybe one, five of those teachers definitely needed to be kicked out of the college. It does happen. You get people going there who've been there for several years, and they just don't continue to perform the way they were when they were younger.
Floyd, it's sort of like it can be abused in the way of cronyism, sort of, and political parties do it, don't they?
And
it's Jeb's turn to be president, don't you think?
The thing about tenure. Say if I wanted to run as a Democratic candidate and we had a Republican board for the college, and they don't like the idea of having a Democrat there, they could remove me simply because I was a Democrat. running, and they didn't like that. So tenure can protect an individual from voicing their thoughts. I would never have brought up any kind of political ideas in my classroom. I teach computer science. So I'm not going to talk about politics. I don't even come close to there. But this, if I did, then I deserve to be let go. There's no basis. If I'm outside my classroom, if I believe in workman's compensation, overtime
pay, whatever your beliefs,
child welfare laws and stuff like that, if I believe in things like that, I don't have the right to get fired because
you shouldn't be fired. Of course,
someone doesn't believe minimum wage laws, doesn't believe in overtime pay.
But when you're in a situation where the politics become more important than the purpose of the school, which is to teach and educate, then the abuse becomes apparent.
You're listening to 1490 AM.
I'll wait for this. I'll go through this.
WPR. Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
The tenure is something to beat up on and make people who are unaware of the real value of people who publish and so forth. And the tenure is not the problem. It's a boogeyman that's the people who are uneducated or people who play upon people who are uneducated use to go after college.
And the other thing would happen is once a person starts to spend more time, they hire teachers at extremely low rates.
Barely
above poverty. But as they get more time in, they get better salaries. But what would happen if you got rid of tenure? As soon as a person started to get a decent professional salary, they would get rid of them. Unfortunately, we have to end this conversation.
We'll see
you back here on Friday, and I hope you tune in 1498.
And hopefully we have a better reception out there. But obviously, we've been listened to by a few people, and we'll try to have that happen again on Friday with Mitch Perry.